The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome once again to Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams, and every Sunday we gather like this to talk sports with a wide range of people. They're all interesting, I guarantee you that, and they all have a story to tell. We get on the air thanks to Jeff Sennis, our engineer, and Andrew Herdliska is our producer. Our guest in the first segment, Patrick McCaskey, longtime executive with the Chicago Bears Football Club, and always wonderful to catch up with him. Pat, welcome. I hope things are well with you.
Fine. Thank you, Pat. I hope things are well with you. How are you doing?
Pat, I'm doing well. And in addition to being a football executive for many years, Pat is an author, a rather prolific author, if I may say. Pat, your new book is out. I've read it. It's called A Worthwhile Struggle. I'm curious about that title. What does that mean?
On the dedication page, I have listed several worthwhile struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Committee work, family, football, love, providing respectful comic relief, and writing books. These are all worthwhile struggles.
Where do your book ideas come from, Pat?
I was an English major because I wanted to be a writer.
Really?
And I really majored in James Thurber and E.B. White.
No kidding.
I read all of their books and all the magazine articles about them. And that's the genesis of my writing. Those two are two of my literary heroes.
What was the first book you wrote?
The first book was called Bear With Me, A Family History of George Halason, the Chicago Bears. That came out 10 years ago. But I worked on that for 40 years before I got it published. I started in college. And
where'd you go to school, by the way, Pat?
I went to Indiana University in Bloomington.
Pat, I'm not sure.
And I went to Loyola University in Chicago, and I finished my undergraduate work at Indiana University. And during the off seasons at night, I went to DePaul University in Chicago for a master's degree.
Boy, that's impressive. Pat, I was not aware of your IU background. I got my master's degree at IU.
Oh, wonderful.
I went to Wake Forest, and then in the fall of 1962, I was in Bloomington for three semesters and got my master's, and just loved my time in Bloomington. Just loved it. Had a great experience.
Got a very good education there.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So, Pat, we'll get back to that first book because I'm interested in that. But what is the mission here with Worthwhile Struggle? What do you want readers to take from that book?
It's a collection of essays and poems about sports and faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 10 chapter titles are what I have written as the Ten Commandments of Football.
Mm-hmm.
And the final chapter is a collection of faith-based poems.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the cover of that book. It's quite intriguing.
Sister Jean of Loyola University is on the cover, and she's holding a basketball because she's the chaplain for the Loyola University basketball team. And last season, they had a tremendous run and made the very successful run in the NCAA basketball tournament. She has a big smile on her face, and she is very good at what she does.
She's what, 99, Pat? Is that right?
Yes, she is.
How is she doing? Is she still as perky as ever?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. She's a wonderful lady, and Loyola feels very blessed to have her as their chaplain.
Well, Pat, that's inspiring to me. In another 20 years, I'll have caught her.
And there's no hurry.
Yeah, we don't want to rush it. But at 99, to be that active and that sharp and that involved,
tremendous.
Boy, that's inspiring to me. I want to write a book on aging, you know, how to live to be a healthy 100.
Oh, I'd be very interested in reading that book, and I'd even buy it.
I think that's the working title, how to live to be a healthy 100. So maybe Sister Jean could write the foreword for me.
She would do very well for you.
Yeah, that's great. What did that run last year of the Loyola Ramblers mean to the city of Chicago? What was it like?
Oh, it was very exciting. And it was terrific throughout the season. We could tell early on that they were going to be a very good team. And they played very well throughout the season, and particularly in the playoffs. It was just exciting.
Yeah, and when a team gets hot in Chicago, Pat, there's nothing quite like it. That's what I remember from my years there. Nothing quite like it.
Yes, very good fan base here in Chicago, and Loyola won the national championship in 1963.
Yes.
With a terrific team, and it was terrific to have them back in the playoffs and doing so well.
I saw that game in 63, Pat. I was
good.
I was in my second year at IU, and we went down to Louisville and somehow got tickets to get in. And I have vivid memories of those Ramblers under Coach George Ireland.
That was an excellent team. They're very well coached.
Yeah, that was a memorable night. I'm glad I took the time to go down there. That was special. Special.
Yeah.
Pat, let's go back to your first book 10 years ago. And you said it took 40 years. I'm curious about how it all came about and how you got a publisher and what was the end result of all that?
Well, I had been having booklets of my writings printed and given out to family and friends for 30 years or 30 booklets worth. And when I had the opportunity to make a presentation to a publisher, I spread those 30 booklets out on a conference table and said, "This is what I've written, and I'd like to have the opportunity to have excerpts from these 30 booklets in a book." And the publisher said, "Fine," and that was how the first book got published.
Pat, tell me the story. Who was the original Mr. McCaskey? Well, where does that fit with the great George Halas? Your family background's intriguing. Can you explain it to us?
My father, Ed McCaskey, was born in Philadelphia, grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Sure.
And he was a descendant of John Pearsall McCaskey, who was a teacher and a principal at Boys High School in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, for over 50 years. And after he died in 1937, the school was renamed after him. So there's a McCaskey High School in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Interesting.
But my father went to the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother went to Drexel in Philadelphia, and that's how they met. And they got married in 1943 on February 2nd. And a short 24 and a half years later, my father started working for the Chicago Bears.
And where does George Halas fit into the story?
He's my mother's father.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born in Chicago, grew up in Chicago, went to Crane Tech High School, then the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was in the Navy and played for Great Lakes in the 1919 Rose Bowl. He was the most valuable player in that game, and a short 100 years later was inducted into the Rose Bowl Game Hall of Fame. But in 1920, he started the Bears and was one of the founders of what is now called the National Football League. He played for the Bears for 10 years. He coached the team for 40 years, and he was the owner of the team for 62 years until he died in 1983 at the age of 88.
Mm-hmm.
He left the team to his family.
And so is your mother still living?
Yes, she's 96 years old.
Really?
And doing very well.
Isn't that?
She is the Bears corporate secretary. She's on the Bears board of directors. She goes to all the games, home and away.
Really?
And
wow.
She's doing very well. Thank you.
Absolutely fascinating. My guest is Patrick McCaskey, Vice President of the Chicago Bears. His latest book is out, Worthwhile Struggle. We've got another segment with Pat. Just a reminder, you're listening to Inside the Game. We do this show every weekend with different sports personalities from around the country, and always very pleased when you join us. I'm your host, Pat Williams, and we want you to stay with us right here on AM 660, The Answer in Orlando. More with Pat McCaskey. Stay with us. This is Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. Pat McCaskey is our guest, Vice President of the Chicago Bears, author of Worthwhile Struggle. Pat, you gave us really an intriguing outline of your family's roots. What was the George Halas-Ed McCaskey relationship like?
Well, at first, my grandfather was very supportive of my parents getting married, and then he wasn't.
Really?
So my parents eloped.
Ah.
They fled to Baltimore and got married.
Mm-hmm.
And in lieu of didn't have much means for a while, but my father was a very successful salesman, and my parents got married in 1943.
Right in the middle of the World War II, right?
Yes. Yes, that's right. My father was in the Army, stationed in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather was in the Navy during World War I and World War II. And he was in the Pacific during World War II. But after a while, and after the birth of my parents' 11 children, everybody calmed down. And in 1967, my father started working for the Bears as the liaison among the owners and coaches and players. His first day on the job, Brian Piccolo came to him and said, "Don't worry about a thing, Big Ed. I'll square you away with the players."
And
he did. And my parents very fond of Brian Piccolo and actually adopted him. So after that happened, I was no longer the best athlete in the family. But that was fine because Brian was a great guy, and we still have the Brian Piccolo Awards coming up next month, where the Bears players vote for the rookie and the veteran who best exemplify the courage, loyalty, teamwork, dedication, and sense of humor of Brian Piccolo.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have that ceremony on April 23rd, 2 days before the start of the National Football League Collegiate Player Draft.
Isn't that great? I don't know whether I ever told you this, and I might have. I was at Wake Forest the same period that Brian was. I was a senior when he was a freshman, but
wonderful.
We were there together. Still remember him. Very energetic, enthusiastic guy. Played football hard. You knew when he was in the room. He was not a shrinking violet. And left his mark at Wake Forest. Brian Piccolo's name is all over that campus at Wake. So he's left a legacy everywhere he's been.
There was a movie called Brian's Song in 1971.
Yes.
And resonates with people even to this day.
Yeah. And I would say this,
Pat. In a chapter in Gale Sayers' autobiography, I Am Third.
Yes.
The screenplay was based on that chapter of the friendship between Gale and Brian. And when Gale Sayers received the George Halas Award for Courage after the 1969 season, Gale said, "This is my award tonight, but tomorrow I'm giving it to Brian Piccolo because he exemplifies the word courage 24 hours a day."
Mm.
And my father wrote that speech for Gale.
Did he?
And my father said that was the best thing he had ever written.
Isn't that tremendous? Pat McCaskey, our guest, Worthwhile Struggle. It's a good read. I encourage you to track that down. Amazon.com, always a wonderful way to order books. Pat, what do you remember about your grandfather, George Halas? What comes to mind?
Well, he was very dedicated. He called the people who work on Saturdays the Saturday crew. I was honored to be a part of that. He worked very hard, and he had a very good sense of humor while doing it. He was very much wanting the Bears to win championships and help other people. And he worked for the good of the National Football League.
Would he be stunned, Pat, at the enormous growth of the NFL?
Well, he said that his greatest thrill in sports was to be a part of the growth of the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
For 40 years, from 1920 through 1960, it was a struggle every year to pay the bills. The big breakthrough came in 1960 with the television contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he was instrumental in having the proceeds from the contract be divided equally among each of the NFL teams, regardless of the size of the market.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped the league prosper.
Pat, what is the state of your current Bears team right now? What are your thoughts?
Well, last season we won 12 games and made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in good position to improve on that record and go deeper in the playoffs. And we're working diligently to make that happen. We're actually expanding our Hallis Hall in Lake Forest, doubling the size of the building, so that it will be state of the art and be a good position to be successful for a long time.
I am amazed, Pat, around the country, the NFL, these facilities that are being built for practice purposes and coaches' meeting places, etc. It's just amazing to me the magnitude of these facilities.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Pat, I just wanted to talk about those facilities that are being built by NFL teams around the country, around the league, that are just absolutely state-of-the-art plus. Do you agree?
I do. We studied facilities in other NFL cities, and we studied college facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to incorporate the best ideas from all the places that we've studied. And we're almost finished with the renovation.
Pat, I want you to expand and tell our listeners your definition of worthwhile struggles.
Well, I think that all of us are on a pilgrimage to heaven, and along the way, we encounter struggles because the Garden of Eden was closed a long time ago. But through the grace of God and the help of the church, those struggles become worthwhile for us to achieve the ultimate goal of heaven.
And I think we learn from our struggles, Pat. I think we're more teachable when we're going through tough times. That's what I've learned. And
I agree with you, as I usually do. I'm very grateful for all of the books that you've written and all the things that I've learned and many, many people have learned from your literary efforts. I have a complete bookshelf at home with all the books that you've written.
That's funny.
Hard to keep them in chronological order or alphabetical order, but that's a worthwhile struggle, too.
Well, you're very good. While you have said that, my most recent book, folks, is just out. It's called Character Carved in Stone. And it's about a trip I made a couple of years ago to West Point to speak to the Army sports teams. And in touring the campus, I came across a little park called Trophy Point. And in Trophy Point, there are 12 benches. And at the end of each bench, there's a word carved into the stone, a different word. And we learned that those benches were a gift from the class of 1934, and those words were designed to inspire the students, the cadets, to burn them into their souls and affect how they would lead in their life. And so we wrote the book, a chapter on each one of those words with West Point Products modeling, who modeled those words, and that's the meat of it. So... And a great Chicago favorite, Pat, one Mike Krzyzewski, from the south side of Chicago, a West Point grad. He wrote the foreword for us. So we have some good Chicago ties. I'm so glad we could visit, Pat. I always enjoy your books. Always enjoy visiting with you when our paths cross. And I wish you nothing but further success. And may the Bears have a great year ahead.
Well, thank you, Pat. I appreciate you very much. You're a great friend and a wonderful writer, a tremendous executive, and it's an honor to be associated with you. And thank you very much for having me on the show.
Pat McCaskey, our guest, author of Worthwhile Struggle. We've got more after this You're listening to Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams, and this is AM 660, The Answer in Orlando. Patrick McCaskey, our guest in that first segment, vice president of the Chicago Bears Football Club and author of his new book, Worthwhile Struggle. Dennis Marouk is with us. Great NHL player, played in two NHL All-Star games, holds the Washington Caps record for the most points, 136 in a single season. Dennis has a book out, The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60-Goal Man. Dennis, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Super.
Hey, Dennis, describe the city of Toronto, where you are, to one who's never been there.
Well, it's a pretty big city, crazy city, a lot of traffic, but it's a beautiful big city. There's no doubt about it. We're finally getting over some of this winter weather that we've had, and nice sunny day. But there's a lot to do here, and of course we get the big sports scene as well with the Raptors, the Maple Leafs, the soccer, and the Argonauts, and all that. So we it's just a great big city.
Dennis, I want you to explain the subtitle of your book, The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60-Goal Man.
I'm a tiny guy.
What's your take on that subtitle?
Well, you know, I wasn't interested in doing a book, as a matter of fact, and I was contacted by Ken Reed, who does the sports here in Toronto, and we got talking, telling stories and stuff like that, and he said, so we got into about a lot of different things, and he said, when you talk about 60 goal scorers in the NHL, there's 20 of them, and my name doesn't really come up, and you know, maybe the teams that I played on didn't get a lot of recognition, so we came up with the title, the Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60-Goal Man, which I was the seventh one to do it.
Mm. Tell me how you started playing hockey as a kid. What do you remember?
Well, I remember playing street hockey in Toronto when I was 7 years old, and then ended up not really in starting to play regular hockey, and one of the goalies was playing house league hockey, and he said, well, we need some more hockey players on our team. Why don't you come try out and play on our team? So, and I was 8 years old, that's when it started, and started playing hockey there, and did my youth hockey through Toronto, and then junior hockey in London, Ontario, with the London Knights, and then I was drafted by California Golden Seals in 75-76.
Dennis, what does ice hockey mean to the nation of Canada?
I would say it's the number one sport. There's no doubt about it. As a child growing up, you know, I don't know if you've heard of Hockey Night in Canada. Every Saturday night, I think every household will be sitting around watching Hockey Night in Canada and the original six teams, you know, with Chicago and New York Rangers, Boston Bruins, Tampa Bay Leafs, and it was just a big thing to do, and I think it's just continued on and still is today. So I think you have a lot of kids playing hockey, and it just keeps going.
Do you still enjoy watching the game?
Yeah, I still enjoy. As a matter of fact, I still skate and play. I probably play about 50 games, 50, 60 charity hockey games throughout the year. I'm 63 years old and still enjoy playing. No contact, which is great, and I have a lot of fun doing it. But I still enjoy watching the game. They've changed the rules a little bit. My time was a little different style of hockey compared to what it is today. But it's exciting to go watch the games. And I go to Washington a few times and watch the Capitals. I played there, and it's a lot of fun, and to see the fans and how excited they are about the game of hockey in the D.C. area.
Explain the fighting that was such a big part of hockey some years back. It's still there. Explain that.
I think it still is there now, but during the time, a lot of times there's players that made it to the NHL due to that. That was their job. That was their job to, fight and stir up the team and stir up the game and stuff like that. But now it's kind of gone out a little bit. Is it part of the game? I think it's going to eventually go out the way the rules have changed and things have gone on. And it's more of a finesse game. But during the time I played, 75 to 89, and a little bit after that, there was a lot of fighting going. I think it's just there was players that was there. That was their name. That was their mark. But now they've got players that are strong and can handle their own battle. So there's not as much fighting in today's game, but there was a lot then. And I just think it was just, the intensity level of the game and, the players getting their sticks up a little too high above the shoulders, and it created a little fight.
If you were going to put a Mount Rushmore up, of the six hockey players, Dennis, who should be engraved in stone, who are your six?
Oh, okay. You're counting today's game or my time?
Well, let's do the whole history.
Got Gordie Howe. There's no doubt about it.
So Gordie's up there.
Yeah, Bobby Orr, who turned 71 today. He'd be up there. You got Ken Dryden with Montreal Canadiens. You've got Phil Esposito. You've got Wayne Gretzky, and you've got Mario Lemieux.
Mm.
Then you got a Paul Coffey in there too.
How about that? Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, Ken Dryden, Phil Esposito, Wayne Gretzky, and Mario Lemieux. That sounds good to me.
Not a bad line, anyway. That's for sure.
yeah, they'd win some Stanley Cups. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think they have. As a matter of fact,
That's
already. Yeah. So.
Now, Dennis, you have some interesting stories in your book. For example, there's the story of your transformation from a feared NHL sniper to ship captain. What was that about?
Well, an interesting thing, you read a book, I read a lot of James Patterson books. I don't know if you have the chapter.
Sure, sure.
It's all pretty much short chapters and kind of a twist and throw on the investigating and killings and all that in his books. And I didn't want to have a document. I didn't want to have a book where I started out playing hockey at 8 years old in Toronto, and then I went to 9 years old, 10. I wanted to be a twist and throw. I want to put in stories. I want to do things that people want to know. Did he really do that? So that's what it was. That first chapter was I retired. I was in Louisiana and got asked to a friend to work on a cruise ship that was delivering supplies to the oil rigs. The company was called Devon Energy, and I was a deckhand, and there was two deckhands and two captains. The boat was 160 foot, and stacked with supplies to these oil rigs. And it was just, I would get up there the first time. The captain goes, one captain sleeping, the other deckhand sleeping, and then there's the deckhand and the captain was driving the boat out to the oil rigs. And he goes, the captain goes, anyway, I'm tired. I'm going to lay down. And I go, what do you mean? Who's here? Yeah, right. And he says, yeah, I just sit on the seat there and look at the pilots. It's all pilot, and you just got to be watch out for those little white bars. And I go, what are those? And those are those big cruise liners and all that. You just got to be careful of that. And all of a sudden, I said, okay, got on there a little nervous. And then we had a big storm. And I got really, real panicky. And the boat was going from one side to the other, and the waves are right up top where we were in the captain's quarter there. But woke him up, and he said, don't worry about it. It's a whole storm. Just stay on the pilot. You'll be fine. So that's how I kind of wanted to start the story. And of course, you read there's a bunch of other different stories in there, too. But I want to start out with that one.
And then you were a farmhand to John Oates. What was that about?
Yeah. I worked for a company, and when I was living in Aspen, Colorado, furniture store. I was managing the warehouse, and Goldie Hawn would come in, and John Oates and all of them would come in and buy some furniture, and we delivered and all that. And then John came in one day and asked the owner, a friend of mine, and said, "Do you have anybody that would like to come and help me? I just fired my my workers down on my property, and I need to move a 100-year-old farm machinery. He lives up in just outside Aspen, Colorado." And Paul said, "Well, Dennis is available." And I said, "Okay." And I met John, and John says, "Well, here, I'm going to come over this Saturday." And gave me the address, went over there, and ended up helping him. He says, "You do a pretty good job. Are you free to do landscape? Do you do yard work? Or, I need somebody to take care of when I'm out on the road." And I said, "Sure, I'll come over." And I'd work for 3 hours, or I'd come all day Saturday and work. And he just said, "Well, I'm going to hire you." And I said, "He said, you can come anytime. Just take care of the dead trees and the dead apple trees, and I put in new ones." And I just kept my work for about a year and a half, and became friends with him. So it was an interesting story. And as hockey players, we all want to become musicians. And a lot of times I met musicians, they want to become hockey players. So it was interesting to talk about two different things.
My guest is Dennis Marouk, great hockey player from the past, author of the book. It's simply called Dennis Marouk. Very interesting read. The unforgettable story of hockey's forgotten 60-goal man. You're listening to Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. We gather like this every weekend right here at AM 660, The Answer, to talk sports. We'll be back with Dennis, but first we've got some messages. Please visit my website. It's patwilliams.com, the Twitter page, Orlando Magic Pat. And my most recent book is just out. It's called Character Carved in Stone, The 12 Benches at Trophy Point on the campus at West Point. I think you'll enjoy it. Back after this. Dennis Marouk scored 356 goals and added 522 assists for 878 points in 888 career NHL regular season games. 888. Dennis, are all those games just merged together, or do you remember all of them?
No, I don't remember all of them. No. I remember my first goal in that. In Toronto, and we in Nickley Gardens in front of my parents and family. So
what happened?
Kind of nice.
What happened?
Hmm?
Right, tell me about the first goal.
The first goal? No, I was growing up as a kid and watching the Maple Leafs and going to Nickley Gardens, and I ended up had a lot of friends and family was there, parents, and ended up had a good scoring chance and scored my first goal in front of a lot of, so it started things for me in that first year, and ended up scoring 30 goals.
How did you know when it was time to retire?
I shattered my kneecap and after playing 13 years, and it took a long time to heal, and it just wasn't 100%, and I could have carried on a couple more years, and I just felt that I put my time in it, 14 years, and one negative thing was I didn't get to win a Stanley Cup. But, I had a dream as a boy. I made it to the NHL and had played a lot of games. So, it was time to maybe move on and let someone else have a chance to play.
Dennis, I'm going to give you the names of hockey players. I just want you to give us your thoughts. Tell me about Gordie Howe as a player.
Well, I watched Gordie Howe a lot and got to meet him many, many times in different charity events. And I think Gordie Howe was just one of those players that you certainly didn't want to piss off anyways in the game, because he was, he had good elbows and stuff, but he was, could score goals, make plays, and just an all-around great, great player. And I would say probably the best hockey player that's ever played a game.
Tell me about Bobby Orr.
Okay. Goalie out these ends, but very, very fast. And just was, you know, from what I heard, from, I played my first 2 years against him, but he had a banged up knee, but didn't play a lot. But just probably one of the best, probably the best defenseman ever played the game.
Tell me about Phil Esposito.
Good move, Phil Esposito. If you want a guy to score a goal on your team, it'd be that man right there. And I believe he was the first 60-goal scorer in the NHL. I think he had 76 and 78 games that year. You know, he had some good players to play with. He played with Bobby Orr there in Boston, Kenny Hodges, Wayne Cashman. They had a great line. And then we went to New York, he did the same thing. He's just great hands, great shot, and in the slot area, he'd be one guy that you want to get the puck to, and you knew it was going in the net.
Tell me about Bobby Hull.
Bobby Hull. Well, I guess you could say one of the best slap shots in the game. Very electrifying, up and down winger, and he certainly I wouldn't want to be a goalie having him coming down during the time when he was playing, taking those slap shots, and a lot of goalies. Did not have a mask on in that during that time, but yes, I met Bobby and his sons and that. But Brett Hull was a great goal scorer too. But Bobby just during that time was probably the strongest, fastest slap shot player and goal scorer during that time.
Stan Mikita.
Mr. Playmaker, all-around player, kill penalties. I guess him and Bobby created the half-moon hockey stick. And not only was a great man on the ice, but also off the ice, a great ambassador of the game. And I think that he showed that in Chicago, and I think he played pretty much his whole career there, and just a great centerman.
Dennis Marouk is our guest. Longtime NHL player. His book is out. It's just simply called Dennis Marouk, and a very, very interesting read. Dennis, how about Bobby Clark in Philadelphia? What do you remember?
I got to play against Bobby Clark a lot in my career, and I think a lot of people say he was one of the chippiest, dirtiest players in the game. And, they had the Brad Street Bullies there in Philly, and they had some tough guys. And we had, when I played for Washington and against the Flyers, we had a lot of brawls, we had a lot of fights, and a lot of, very intense hockey games. But as a leader, he probably could be, one of the best leaders in the game today. That he gave everything on the ice. He wasn't a great goal scorer in that, but he worked so hard. He was a great leader. Players would look up to him, saying, look at the way this guy's playing. He just goes all out. And, I ended up meeting with him after he retired at an event, and he said to me, you were a prick out there. And I go, well, Bobby, you weren't too bad of a prick yourself. And he goes, every time we played against you, all we did was circle 21 and get him, we got a chance to win the game. And I had a lot of respect for that. So, that was me.
Dennis, if you had to start an NHL team from scratch, and you could pick any goalie from any NHL history, who do you want in the nets?
I think the two goalies that I would take, during my time, it would be Ken Dryden and Grant Fuhr.
Mm-hmm. And you rotate them?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You have to. Two of the best goalies I played against, and I think Mr. Fuhr didn't get as much credit as he should have got during the mid-80s when they won all the Stanley Cups, because the team was so explosive and powerful offensively that the other teams had so many great scoring chances against them, and he came up with some great saves.
Dennis, I'm interested in those little Canadian towns, like where Bobby Clark is from, Flin Flon, Canada. little towns up in the farmland of Canada, growing up with Manitoba, hockey.
Manitoba, yeah. What are
those little towns like?
Meaning regarding hockey?
Yeah. What happens up there? The population's not very big. The weather, it's always cold. I mean, what do those little towns produce? Where are these great players come out of there?
A lot of farming. And why do they produce hockey players? They're strong, they're tough, they're feisty, and, yeah, there's a lot of bus rides. I know that from, I played in the East, so I didn't play out West, but I know that playing with guys that from out West and all that, they just, there's a lot of bus rides. And I guess to me it was, maybe that was what they had to do is, for excitement and all that was, instead of farming and all that, was to play hockey, youth hockey. A lot of them played youth hockey and then right up to the junior ranks. And the Western Canadian Junior League is a big, strong, powerful league.
Tell me about Wayne Gretzky, the player.
The player on ice, I would say, yeah, he was one player that could do so much. I call him Mr. Reed and React. He was so far ahead of everybody else and making plays. And I think, yes, a lot of people look at the personnel that he had playing in Edmonton. He had, Mark Messier, Paul Coffey, Glenn Anderson, the Artie Curry, Kevin Love, Grant, you go down the road. But he could do a lot, produced a lot of those points, but he was so, so good with a puck. He had that extra edge, that extra player, that extra move, and it was tough to knock down or get off the puck.
Tell me about Mario Lemieux as a player.
A lot of people compare, they'll kind of say they either pick you pick Mario Lemieux or Wayne Gretzky as the best hockey player, and there's a lot of debate on that between the two of them. Mario had some injuries, some health issues, and all that. They were just, Mario Lemieux had the reach. He was very explosive, more than a lot of people didn't realize that they had that explosive speed when he got going, big reach, great hands. And he came out of the Quebec Junior League with, unbelievable numbers. And it just, carried right on and, into the NHL with Pittsburgh. And I'd have to say, if he was able to play as long as a little more than Gretzky, probably had the same amount of records or even more.
Dennis, do you see that kind of young talent coming along in the NHL?
I think there's some, but I don't think you're not going to find another Mario Lemieux. You're not going to find another Gretzky. You're going to find along the way the game is today is a lot of finesse, and you're going to see a lot of Europeans, Europeans coming mm-hmm. over the years that are good hockey players. Connor McDavid is electrifying. He's extremely fast. I think if he was on like a team like the Edmonton Oilers, he'd have probably 200 points as well. He's one of the players that I think is the fastest in the league and can do so much at his speed.
Dennis, I'm so glad we could visit. It's wonderful to get your thoughts on hockey from the past and hockey currently. And I've got one question. What do you remember about Goldie Hawn?
She called me. I was her hockey love. it was kind of interesting. They had to come in and came into the store and wanted to buy something for Kurt. And they have two homes in there. They placed there in Boulder, in Colorado, like a farming house and then a big Victorian. She wanted to get this big chandelier for Kurt and come in there and looking at all that. We had one. It was about $20,000, I think, this big and with horns and whatever it was for the ranch part home. And she comes up to me and she goes, hey, do you know where we can go have a cigarette? And I go, well, yeah, just out in the parking lot there where you came in. He said, okay, and so would you come out with me and just talk to me so you know I don't have any problems? I said, sure. So I went out there and said, okay, come on, we come back in and ended up, she ended up buying the chandelier part and we ended up taking it over there and delivering it to the place and got talked to a little bit more. And And then, of course, I met Kurt about the doing Herb Brooks of the Miracle on Ice, and we had a great chat.
Dennis Marouk has been our guest. Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. It's AM 660 The Answer. Have a wonderful weekend, and we're back next weekend for more.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.